Bob gave me a tape of this young fellow that's going to lead this here meeting for us this afternoon. And, of course, I took it home, and I read it. And I liked what I heard. I always like to hear a tape of a guy that's from a far-off land, and Father Leal happens to be from London. And I like what he said about this here program. And I'm going to sit down this afternoon and listen a little closer to what the good father has to say. With that, I'll give you Father Leal from California, really.
My name's Leo, and I'm an alcoholic. And if you don't mind, I much prefer to stand in front of the podium than behind it, because it reminds me so much of what I do on Sundays when I get stuck behind things like this. And one thing I'm absolutely convinced about, and that is that this is a spiritual program, it's not a religious program, and I think that it incorporates all and every human being, because I believe it has the answer to so many problems that human beings face. And I know that in my life it's been the source of inspiration and help. First of all, I'd like to say that I've come here after traveling in Atlanta and Florida, and this is the last of my trips on the way back to California, where I live. And I want you to know that it's a tremendous, I mean, words are not going to be able to express what I feel, but it's a tremendous honor to be here to speak with you on the 50th anniversary of AA in Akron, Ohio. And after I've spoken here, I'm going to have a visit to Dr. Bob's house, and I know that for me that's going to just visually represent that wonderful meeting and that series of meetings that took place that brought health and healing into my life, and I know into yours. So it's a very emotional and it's a very special thing for me to be here talking to you all this afternoon. As you've just heard said, I'm from London, although I've lived in California for 4 years, and that's my home now. I work with hospitals there. And you probably may not know it, but at different times, America and England use different words, different expressions for different things, so it can be a bit confusing at times. Oscar Wilde said years ago that America and England are two countries divided by a common language. Very true. Give you an example. 4 years ago, when I first came over, I had to go to my church to say Mass early in the morning, and an old lady parked her car in front of the garage where I lived. So I asked her to move it, which she did. I then got in my car and drove to the church. I was a few minutes late, so I stood before the congregation rather like I'm standing before you all now, and I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry that I'm late, but I had to knock up an old lady before I came to church." Congregation responded just like you. Except I'm pleased to say there was an increase in old ladies at church the following Sunday. You know, it's real tremendous to be here. In every country, you know I'm from London, but every country has its famous drunks. You have Dean Martin. We had Winston Churchill. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know that Winston Churchill fought the Second World War with a glass of brandy by his side. I don't know whether he was an alcoholic or not. All I know is he really liked his brandy. Lovely story that Winston Churchill sitting at dinner with Lady Astor. Lady Astor turned to Winston Churchill and said, "Winnie,
Winnie, you're drunk. And Winston Churchill looked at her in his inimitable way and said,
Madam, you are ugly. But I shall wake up sober in the morning.
And she was very quick to say to him, Winnie, if I was your wife, I'd put poison in your soup.
Madam, if I was your husband, I'd drink it.
Now, the only reason why I say that is I don't care who you are, I don't care who you are, where you're from. Any joke that you ever hear about an alcoholic reveals something of the disease. Doesn't matter. Any joke that's ever told about an alcoholic reveals something of the disease. The arrogance of Winston Churchill. The manipulation, the way he changed the subject. When she said, you're drunk, he said, you're ugly. Changing the subject. Something that I did for so long. The craziness. You hear the craziness and the insanity. Two drunks talking to one another. One drunk says to the other, you're so stupid. I bet you can't spell Minneapolis. And he said, I bet you can't spell Mississippi. He says, I can spell Mississippi, but do you mean the river or the state? Now, I'm tell you those few little things because I think that one of the things that sobriety in this 50 years anniversary has given to every one of us is the ability to laugh again, to have some fun again. What's the point in getting sober if you're going to be serious and dull and miserable? One of the great things about sobriety is that we have the ability to be able to laugh at ourselves. And we have the ability now, in this program, to keep things simple. Those wonderful things that Dr. Bob said. I'm mindful of that when I'm in Akron. Mindful of what he said. Keep it simple. And he also said something else, which I share with you. Many of you from Akron probably know it so much, but I, first time I've really digested it. When he was talking about life, he said that there's an analogy between a camel. He said at the end of the day, the camel kneels down and has the burdens taken off its shoulders. And then next morning, that same camel kneels down. And just enough burden is put on that shoulder again to live the next day. And that's what every one of us in this room finds. Sure, we have our problems. Sure, we have our burdens. There's nobody here that doesn't have problems or difficulties, something that goes on. Today we're sober. Today we're able to live our lives the way they should be lived, and we take responsibility for our disease. I'm going to share my story with you. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I say that because I believe that that meeting that took place between Bill W. and Dr. Bob let loose onto the world a miracle that you and I share. And I want to say right from the very beginning, as somebody from England, you know, there are many, many, many things that America can be famous for and proud of. But for me personally, one of the most wonderful things that came out of America is Alcoholics Anonymous. And you've no idea how grateful I am, because I honestly believe that had that meeting not taken place, I wouldn't be here now. And I got sober in England and went to AA in England. 9 years ago. Well, 9 years on the 4th of July. My sobriety date's on the 4th of July. Didn't mean a damn thing to me when I was in England. But then I found out what you did with all that tea. terrific to be able to share. I started drinking when I was 15 years old in a private school in England. Nothing very extraordinary. Had beer before we went to bed. We had to stay at the school. And I'm one of those people who can say it wasn't so much that I got drunk right away, it wasn't so much that I liked the taste, but the one thing that I remember now, the one thing that goes right back, is I liked how I felt when I drank. I believe this is a disease of the feeling. I liked how I felt when I drank. I'm 5'7", 5'8" on a very good day. When I drank alcohol, I felt 6'2". Felt bigger, had a stammer. I had a stammer until I was 14, 15 years of age. But when I drank, all that embarrassment and fear and ridicule left me, gave me confidence. Alcohol worked for me. And I believe that's the way I took to it and used it. All the way through university, went to some good universities. All the way through university, I drank it. And it wasn't so much that I got, as I say, drunk. Wasn't so much that I was having problems with the dean. It was the fact that slowly the progressiveness of the disease was going on. As the years went by, I was drinking more, more dependent upon it, used it to escape some of the problems that I was in. 1971, I was let loose on a parish in a church in the north of England. And I decided that I had a mission to those people in the bars, those lost, lonely people, those people, sheep without a shepherd. Now you know that that's not the real reason why I was in those bars. I wanted to have a drink. And you know it's a very funny thing, but if you walk into a bar dressed like this, people notice you. The penguin at the end of the bar. Kind of walking oil slicks just come in. And I, again, you know, it's when you've been a priest, and I've been a priest now for a number of years, a lot of people don't know. Everybody wants to talk to a priest, even if they don't like you. They want to tell you before they hit you. And I was standing at the bar there, people had come over, asked you all kinds of questions. All kinds of questions. Father, do you think that Jesus Christ was a spaceman? I don't know whether he was a spaceman, but let's have a couple of drinks and we'll talk about it. Father, do you think that the Virgin Mary really was a virgin? You can't know everybody that well. Hey, Father, what do you think about the pill? When I took the pill, it gave me diarrhea. I did the same. It's no difference. It's no difference that's going on between you and me. I wanted people to like me, just like you. I could tell the jokes. I could do a number. I could play the game. Same thing. Priest, school teacher, doesn't make any difference what you are. Drive trains, doesn't make any difference. I wanted people to like me because for some reason, I didn't think I was good enough. You know, it's said in so many AA meetings, and it's so true. For a long time, I stood and watched my life from the outside. I was like always on the outside of the world looking in. I never felt as if I belonged. You've heard people say it. I wanted to feel like other people looked. I wanted to somehow or other feel inside what I thought other people were feeling. So I wanted, and I'd play the game, make people laugh, and it worked. We'd go back after the bars and we'd drink 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was very popular. You're the kind of priest we like. You're down to earth. You drink like we drink. You vomit like we vomit. Just the kind of guy Jesus wants. You know what people are like. 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. People started going from the bars to my church. It's true. As you know, it's usually the other route, but they started coming from the bars to the church. One woman put it very succinctly. She said to her husband, "Shall we stay at home
and watch Benny Hill, or shall we go to church and listen to Father Leo? Same thing's going to happen. My church got real full. People started coming. Bishop heard about it. He was so impressed. He was real pleased. Real pleased with what was going on. Then, like with so many people in this room, when you start talking about your life, for many of us, there was a period for many of us in this room when alcohol seemed to be working in our favor. It seemed to be the thing that was getting us to meet people. There was that, if you like, that honeymoon period. May not have lasted very long, but there was a time when in my life I could say that my drinking and going into the bars was having some success. People were coming to church. I was mixing with people more. And then at the age of 27 years old, not very old, I was made a parish priest in Brighton, Sussex. Now, you've heard many people stand at podiums like this and say, when I was drinking, I thought I was God. Can you imagine if you're a priest and an alcoholic? You don't think you're God, you know you're God. All that arrogance, you know they call a parish priest, he's a big P. And you have a lot of little P's, they're the assistants that you tell what to do. And I was then at 27 years of age being given this permission of being parish priest, and I had a lot of priests under me, these little P's. I'd send them out to do the work. Go out, go find somebody to baptize. Get out. Get out there, find somebody to marry. Go and visit the sick. Staying in here, and I'll drink with my cronies. But you know, here's a funny thing. You want to know a funny thing? Here's a funny thing. Didn't last 9 months. Didn't last a pregnancy. In 8 months, I was out. Because the disease is, you know, cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's patient. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's patient. You can wait. And I don't know whether, because when you're a speaker, you speak, and I say, I'll work for you now, telling my story, but I'm not the only one working. That was one of the miracles of Dr. Bob meeting Bill W. You've got to work too. My story's your story. My feelings, your feelings. My disease, your disease. Flu's flu. If you're in Tibet with flu, if you're in Philippines with flu, if you're in London with flu, flu's flu. Diarrhea's diarrhea. Alcoholism is alcoholism. If you say, I'm Joe and I'm an alcoholic, I'm Leo, I'm an alcoholic, there's a bridge between you and me. And I know it's true of many people perhaps in this room, once the disease starting getting a hold on me, a hook into me, the down came pretty quick. As I say, in 8 months, after being promoted, in 8 months I lost it. Lost my house, lost my home, lost my people. And I don't say that for you to be sorry for me, because I believe that if you're an alcoholic and you're drinking, everybody's a loser. You can't be a winner, everybody's a loser. Some of those things in the 8 months that happened to me in some kind of way probably happened to you. I mean the feeling, the embarrassment. I don't mean the actual incidents. Incidents are not important. It's what was going on. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. What is that unmanageability? What is that powerlessness? Everybody in his own way has to look into his own life to see the disease. But I know mine. I remember once, doing a funeral, I was drunk, followed the coffin into the hole. I tell you, it's real scary when you start hearing the amens coming from above. The sons of the dead mother, they helped me out. We carried on. It's amazing what people put up with, isn't it? Isn't it amazing? You're drunk at your mother's funeral. They help you out. I think we went and had a couple of drinks after the funeral. But there was one incident. One incident that got to the bishop. That's the man in purple. I had to do a baptism 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't like doing baptisms. I'm not good with children. Some people are good with children. I'm not good with children. Never have been. No, not good now. I had been drinking the night before, and I had one of those little hangovers that we have, and I came to that font 4 o'clock in the afternoon. All the family were there. They were real happy. They had their grandmother there, relatives, and I got hold of this bundle of rags. And I baptized it in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Daphne. Never consulted the mother. The mother screamed. She said, it's a little boy. I said, I don't care what the hell it is, it's Daphne now. They said, is there anything we can do about it? I said, no. Forever and a day, he will be called Daphne. You imagine trying to make amends with a thing like that. Dear Daphne, I ought to bring him to California. But she wrote to the bishop. Bishop telephoned me, I had to go and see him. He said, got a letter here from some family, said you baptized their little boy with a girl's name. Do you make a habit of this? I said, no. And then he did it. He said what I'm sure has been said to you. He said, had you been drinking? Now see if you can catch yourself in this. Me? Drinking? On a Sunday? I'm surprised at you, Bishop. He apologized. I tell you, we made the other people think they were crazy, didn't we? I mean, how many wives went to the psychiatrist long before the alcoholic, or vice versa? You're the one who's stupid, not me. But you know, when I drove home, I tell you, I drove home and I didn't really think that he believed it. You know, like you don't. And he wasn't going to have to wait long before he knew. Because the bumper jack was coming. This is a biggie. I didn't drink for a few months after that incident. I was real scared. And I think it's a good point to say. You know, we talk about this fun bit, baptizing and funerals, but you know, the ongoing thing of this disease, for everybody in this room, drugs, alcohol, come on, food, eating disorders, what the hell, is the loneliness and the fear in here. Telephone would go, I'd be afraid. I couldn't remember what I said or what I did many, many times. Many, many times I used to look out of the window in my house, my church house, to see if my car was there. Couldn't remember where I left my car. Sometimes it was there and I was real pleased. Other times I don't know where the car was. That's the disease. Unmanageability, powerlessness. You don't know where you are in your own life, and it's your life. And it doesn't happen to be happening every day. One of the biggest problems with all of this is you think an alcoholic has to drink all day or in the morning or spirits. Got me kidded for a long time. That's what they mean when they say it's cunning, baffling and powerful. It is cunning, baffling and powerful. A lot of people don't get it. A lot of people die not knowing that they're sick. Well, I'll tell you, I didn't drink because of this fear for a few months. I could do that. I did that quite a lot. A couple of months, leave it alone. A couple of weeks, leave it alone. A week, leave it alone. We had a lovely Christmas. My parents came all the way from lovely Christmas.
And then, when they left, I had the kind of Christmas I like. Went with some friends and got drinking again. And I don't know, have you ever done this? Where you have a good intention, a real good intention as part of your drunk. I decided that I was going to visit a 91-year-old lady and wish her happy birthday. 91. But again, I did it rather like that baptism after I'd been drinking. I went at 6:30 in the morning to the convalescent home where she lives, banging on the door. I was dressed like this, a little penguin banging on the door. They opened the door. I said, I'm here to see Elizabeth. They said, Father Leo. I said, yes. I said, come in. She's just waking up. She was just putting her teeth in. I walk in there. I'm still a bit hungover after drinking before. And she, happy birthday, Elizabeth. 91. She says, it's too early to offer you a drink. I says, try me. And she did, and I did. She offered me sherry. I don't like sherry. But I saw a bottle of gin behind the bottle of sherry. So I thought, I'll drink the bottle of sherry, then I'll be able to drink the gin. Very logical to an alcoholic. Now, I don't know what kind of a drunk you were. Some drunks fight. Some drunks sing. Some drunks cry. I was a dancing drunk. Oh, when I got drunk, I danced. I knew this 91-year-old lady, she wasn't going to be able to dance with anybody. She's still putting her teeth in. But I heard the sound of a vacuum cleaner. Hoover, we say in England. Hoover. I followed the noise of the vacuum cleaner because I thought, where there's vacuum cleaner, there's woman. Now this lady, she's so happy, it's now 7 o'clock in the morning, and as you know, if you're alcoholic, that's dancing time. She's so happy, she's doing her work. She's cleaning that carpet. She's so happy with the day. Husband's gone to work. Children have gone to school. Birds in the air and the sun's in the sky. Little does she know, there's a black blob descending upon her. I said to her, this is the truth. I says to her, dance with me. She said, no, dance with me. She says, no, I says, dance with me. Last time she says, no. So I squeezed her breast. No, 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 no. Not harshly, gently, gently. And she said to me, she says, don't do that. And I don't know what kind of alcoholic you were, but if somebody says to me, don't do that, I did it again. In fact, I was getting quite good at it. When the police came. Oh! I was arrested. Now, I know I'm in Akron, Ohio. I know, you're a good moral group. But I want you to know I'm not the only one in this room here that did a squeeze. Now, you may not be saying, but I know you did it. And those of you that didn't do it, you thought about it. And ladies, you just did it differently. Now, the part about it is I'm arrested. And I'm in a cell. And I'm lonely and I'm afraid. Just like you. You know the fear you taste? You taste it. You feel sick. You want to throw up. And I believe that if I'd have had a gun, I'd have used it. Because you see, that just culminated a whole series of incidents, loneliness, confusion, that was going on for years. Going on for years. Well, I went before the judge, and the judge, he didn't think it was such a big incident. He just gave me a fine. But the press were there. You know those hawks of truth? Well, you've heard of Jack the Ripper. Meet Leo the Squeeze. My mother read about it. She said, I always wanted to see your name in print, but never quite like this. Hey, the bishop read about it. He said, was she Episcopalian? I don't know what she was. Anyway, he said, and it's the same thing that went on with you. It's the same thing that went on with you. Different incidents, same unmanageability, same powerlessness. Bishop said to me, just like husbands or wives or school teachers or employers said to you, he says, if you don't stop drinking, you're out. He says, if you don't put the plug in the jug, you ain't going to be a priest anymore, because I've got to file this thick on your drinking escapade. I've had enough. And I said, okay, you think I can't stop whenever I want to stop? You think I can't? I'll show you. And I did, for 10 months. For 10 months I didn't drink, but it wasn't sobriety. I wasn't saying I was an alcoholic, and I certainly wasn't going to any AA meetings. I just simply put the plug in the jug, and I was dry, and I was miserable, and I was angry, and I was damn resentful. I was mean with me. And you know, it's very funny when you talk about slips. One was coming up for me after 10 months. 10 months of not drinking. And I'm sure many people can identify with it. And a slip doesn't always come on Christmas Day or the 4th of July. It comes on a Wednesday when it's raining. Oh, an ordinary dull day. Telephone goes, somebody says to me, Father Leo, come to her 21st. You come to my daughter's 21st party? I said, no. I don't want to go to the 21st. Please come. Will you please come? So anyway, I went. I'm stood there with my 7-Up, looking thoroughly, thoroughly miserable. Lady comes over to me. She says, Father Leo, I understand you stop drinking now. She says, you look terrific. I said, I feel terrific. You know that joyous sobriety some people exude, full of love and tenderness. And so, then another lady who knew me in the parish, she was probably one of the ones who came from the bar. She said to me, Father Leo, I knew you when you were drinking, and I see you now. And she says, you know the difference between you then and now? I says, no, what? She says, now you are so boring. Boring? Why was I boring? Well, you know why. Bored. Bored people are boring. You don't have to be a PhD to get that one. If you're bored, you're boring. You find them all over the place. You can find them in AA meetings. They sit around and complain. You want to find fault? You can find fault. It's dead easy to find fault with people. You want to do it, you can find spots on anyone if you want to. Nobody's perfect. Never has been, never will be. She put her finger right on the button. I was boring because I was bored. She said, why don't you just have a drink? Just have one gin. That seemed like a good idea. I hadn't had any for 10 months. Well, I'll tell you something, cunning, baffling and powerful. I didn't just have one, I had two. Now, some of you may have thought, I thought he was going to say 22. I had two and I went home. But here's a funny thing. You want to know a funny thing every now and again? Here's a funny thing. I left my watch in the restroom. So the next day I called the barman, George. I said, George, I was at that 21st last night, had two drinks. I said, have you found my watch? He said, yeah, we found it in the restroom. I said, terrific. I said, George, I had two alcoholic drinks last night. I'm not supposed to have any. He said, you were wonderful. Never seen you like that for a long time. You were so happy. I said, George, you don't get the point. I'm not supposed to have any. If the bishop gets to know... He says, hey, you were terrific. I said, George, he says I'm an alcoholic.
He says, how can you be an alcoholic? You had two drinks and you went home. I said, I never said I was an alcoholic. He said I was an alcoholic. I said, George, are you sure that I'm not an alcoholic? Are you sure, George? He said, I'm a barman. I know all about alcoholics. You're not an alcoholic. He says, if you're an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic. And he is. I go to get my watch. He gives me the watch and then he says, by the way, have a gin for the road. Same bar, same barman. Could have been the same glass, same bottle of gin. But you know that morning, 10 o'clock, when I got that watch, last night I could have two. Go home. That morning when I took that drink, I wanted to drink like an alcoholic wants to drink. I had that feel and that taste that you know. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. It doesn't always happen every day. That's what kept so many of us so sick for so long. And I wanted more now. And I started to drink. Three, four, then left. Took my coat off, took my collar off. I went drinking the way I wanted to drink. The way an alcoholic likes to drink sometimes. And I never made it home. And this is my last drunk. Never made it home. This is the 3rd of July. 4th of July is my birthday, as I said. My car hit a tree and hit a lamppost and shot up through the air. Summer's day. Two old ladies in a garden saw the car. They said, look, there goes Father Leo again. That's the way he travels. But you land. You don't stay up there for long. You come down. I'd done it before. I'd been in car crashes before. I knew the drill. I knew what you're supposed to do. You get out. You sit at the side of the road. You wait for the police and the ambulance. I knew I'd done it before. But something happened. I don't know whether it happened to you, but I suspect it did. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. What happened to me was, I was sitting at the side of the road waiting for the police. And I stepped out of myself. You ever done that? You ever seen yourself? I saw me drunk. And I saw me bleeding. And I saw what was going on in my life. Only I hope you get the point. I see it. I'm now seeing me. And I didn't like what I saw. You know, keep it simple, Dr. Bob said. Keep it simple. I didn't like what I was becoming. And I believe that at some level, that's the bottom line for every one of us. We didn't like it enough to do something about it. I've said in my story many, many times, that's my spiritual awakening. Some people, they go rushing around saying, he's talking about a religious conversion. I never said that. If you want to say that, say what you like. I didn't say that. I'm talking about me spiritually seeing me. Me feeling me. Me, for the first time in my life, seeing what's really going on in my life. And I have a choice. I have some choice. And I remember I was scared and I was fearful, but I picked up the telephone and I called the bishop and I went for help. I actually went into a treatment center for 3 months in England. Why 3 months? I'll never know. Except I was so sick and stupid, I wasn't getting it. Everybody else stayed a month. I couldn't understand why the people I came in with, they all went and I was still there. Then I thought, they want me for the chaplain. But you know, I was glad of that 3 months, simply because what happened was they sent us out to AA meetings. They sent me out to AA meetings. And I sat in an AA meeting. I didn't want to go any more than some of you wanted to go. I thought it was some Baptist revival. And then I heard from a Jewish woman, I don't know, 80 years of age, my story. And I heard from a young man who'd never been to the same schools,
my story, and I knew I belonged. The miracle of Bill W. meeting Dr. Bob happened to me. Somebody came with a message, and from that message I heard me. And you know, when you talk about a message, which is the 12th step, I know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry the message. Do you know the message is? We're the message. Message isn't words. Sobriety is to be lived, not just talked about. The 12 steps are not written in a book or written on a wall. If they're going to be anything at all, they have to be written in the heart of all of us. And I heard and I saw me again in that Jewish woman and that young man. And I knew I belonged for the first time in my life. Remember 15 years of age, me going away from me? Because I was. If you say you're an addict, if you say that you're an alcoholic with drugs, you're on a journey away from yourself. That meeting, meetings in AA, made me keep that moment. That moment of that car crash alive. That's a spiritual moment to me because I saw me. But I don't believe that we're not to have the responsibility to keep that moment alive. You see, you can have these moments, but you can let them go. It's like a gift. You can have a gift and you can never use it. But you still got the gift, but you never use it. You see, I think that those of us who have those moments need to keep those moments alive. And how did I keep that moment alive? Same as you. Meeting. Me hearing other people share and talk. You know what happens now? When I stand and I talk about that moment of the car crash, I don't see the car crash anymore. I see me hitting 74-year-old mother who I love, because that's what my alcoholism was for me. I always hit the ones I love. I see me cursing out a crippled father. That's what I did. I was terrific in the bars buying somebody a drink, but with the people I loved, the people I lived with, they got all the venom and they got all the hate. You know, every one of us in this room at different times has said, it's like the Jekyll and Hyde, and you know it really is. In more ways than one. In more ways than one. Dr. Jekyll had to drink the potion. And when Dr. Jekyll drank the potion, Mr. Hyde was so different from Dr. Jekyll. And I was so different when I was drunk than what I was meant to be. And there's another thing too, that Dr. Jekyll never remember what I did when I was drunk. And to the words of Al-Anon, and they know it only so well, because I know there's some Al-Anon and Alateens probably here. Somehow or other, this 12-step program means we've got to be honest and we don't enable any longer. We've got to give a message too, so the alcoholic can hear it. But one of the biggest things for me that I see so clearly in that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde analogy is that there was a time, and it's true, there was a time when Dr. Jekyll seemed to be controlling. He took the potion and Mr. Hyde came out. If he didn't take the potion, Mr. Hyde didn't come out. And then there was that time in his life when he hadn't taken the potion. And when he was with his fiancée and had his arms around her, he noticed the hand of Mr. Hyde. Mr. Hyde was now in control. And I don't believe there's anybody in this room who said they're an alcoholic or has an addiction that doesn't know that there was a point when they crossed over. And all they were getting now was pain and loneliness and fear and chasing themselves around to try to get back feelings. That's how it was with me. AA, sharing. A person telling a story so that another person can hear is what I've got.
from that meeting. That meeting that took place 50 years ago when Bill W. met Dr. Bob. And I want to say it is a spiritual, not a religious thing. I said to some people at a meal, I said, religion itself can become an addiction if it takes you away from being real. If it makes you judge. If it makes you separate yourself and if it keeps you in a box. I don't want to live in a box anymore. I don't want to crawl back in a box. I came out of it, thanks to AA and people like yourself. I don't want to go back in a box. I don't want to point the finger at other people anymore. I don't want to say I'm right and you're wrong anymore. I don't want to do that. I want to learn to live and let live. I've had enough about rules and doctrines. I had my whole life with that. God in a box. I can remember once when I was asked at a school when I was drinking as a priest, they turned around and they said to me, Father, will you say some prayers for the children? I said, I can't. I haven't got a book. It was always somebody else's prayers for me, somebody else's beliefs. And you know what was the first thing that ever said to me, you can have it, you're worth it, was in AA. When they talk about a God as you understand him, not as I understand him, as you understand him, because that's the only way it's going to make sense. And you know, it's a big world. And there's a lot of people in this world, and AA has a message to everybody in this world. Not just Christians. A lot of Jewish people are alcoholic. A lot of people are of a different faith. And I've met, just like you've met, people who were so hurt by the religion of their day that they've actually thrown out not only religion, but also God. And that's why, I think, people like Dr. Bob and Bill W. were so right to say, this is a spiritual fellowship, not a religious one. Because you'd all go crazy. Which one would it be? We'd all be pointing fingers again and trying to get converts. If it's a disease, it's a disease that affects human beings regardless of religion. It's not just Christians or alcoholics. Not just Catholics. A human being is a human being, and I believe that that's the gift of spirituality. I was fortunate enough to be in Rome 4 years into my sobriety. And there was a lot of that in the Sistine Chapel that now is beautiful but doesn't have the same fascination as it used to. But then I looked up on the ceiling of Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel and it did the creation of Adam. Don't know whether you've ever seen it, but you know what I'm going to say. It's the hand of God pointing to the finger of Adam. And you don't know whether they've touched and have separated or whether they're coming together. You don't know. But in that picture of the fingers almost touching, I believe divinity is given to you and me. God's made us something. We are spiritual. You don't have to become it, you have to discover it. That's the difference. You don't have to get it from somebody, you have to discover it within yourself. And for so many of us, it's a lonely journey. And sometimes it's a painful journey. But there can be no growth for many of us without pain. The finger of God has touched every one of our lives. Call it the soul, call it the self, I don't care what you call it. But we weren't created to die in the gutter. We weren't created to die drunks. Physician, heal thyself. In the words of Gandhi, Gandhi said, for us all to hear, he said, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. And it's true. AA says, don't walk about with your resentments. Learn to let go. Let go of them. Live your world, don't live somebody else's. Be responsible for your own disease. Don't be responsible for everybody else's. Live again and love again. I've never forgotten that picture. I've never forgotten that picture in the Sistine Chapel. And there are so many things that bring to me and bring an insight into my disease that are from so many things of life. So many interesting things of life. I share this one with you before I end. There was a man who lived the turn of the century. His name was John Merrick. You and I know him as the Elephant Man. He had a disease like you and I have a disease. His disease was neurofibromatosis. He looked on the outside like we felt sometimes on the inside. And the world did to him exactly what it did to you and me. It made us feel separate and it made him feel separate. Outside. They put him in a circus so they could make money out of him. And he had a keeper. And he had to take his clothes off and stand on a big pedestal so that nice church-going Christians could come and pay money and look at him. And he revealed his disease. And they smiled and they laughed. He was a freak. Just like you and I felt that we were freaks. But one day, he had a spiritual moment when he met a doctor, Dr. Treve. And Dr. Treve looked at him with the eyes of love, just like many of you have looked on another suffering alcoholic with the eyes of love. And he knew he was loved. But unfortunately, the Elephant Man, John Merrick, was taken away to a foreign country and taken away from that doctor. But he knew he had to get back. He knew he had to escape from the circus and get back to that doctor who loved him for the first time in his life. Somebody not only loved, but seemed to understand him. And who helped him? But the bearded woman, the tall, thin man, the pygmy people, the freaks. One alcoholic helping another alcoholic. Somebody who's been there. Helping somebody who is there. The magic of AA. And Dr. Treve was in London. And John Merrick came in a boat from Belgium over the waters. And he was all covered up because he didn't want to show his disease. Because people used to laugh at him just like we hid from people too. But you know, some people on a railway station saw him and they chased him and they chased him against the wall. And they pulled off the cloak and they pulled off the mask. And then they said, "He's not a man. He's an animal. He's not a man. He's an animal." And then he had his moment, like we had ours. He stood up and he said, for the first time in his life, he says, "I'm not an animal. I'm a human being. I'm not an animal. I am a human being like you. My name's Leo, and I'm an alcoholic. I remember when I said that, and I remember when I heard it. But more importantly, I remember when I felt it. I'm not a freak. I'm a human being." And this fellowship and fellowships like this, people like you all over the world, somewhere, are keeping this 50th anniversary. We're no longer freaks and we no longer need to hide and we no longer need to cover ourselves with shame. We're creatures of God. Spiritual. Heal yourself and you'll heal others. Don't be afraid to touch the people you love. I end my talk with you, not from a message from the big book, not from something from the Bible, but I believe from the words of a song that many of you know that I'll say to you because they mean such a lot. It's not only God's world, It's our world to live in and to play in and to love in. God says to you and to me, he says, welcome. Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess. Well, they still happen now and then. Welcome to my world. And leave your cares behind. Welcome to my world. It was built with you in mind. Knock, and the door will open. Seek, and you will find. Ask, and it will be given. The key to this world of mine. And who's the key? You are. You always were. You probably said, like I said, God didn't love me. It wasn't that God didn't love you. It was that for a time, you and I, we forgot to love ourselves. Now we love ourselves. Now we live. Now we play. Now we heal. Now we are the creatures of God that we were intended to be. God's world. Our world. Thanks to AA. Thank you very much for listening to me.